Welcome to Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 10:15 p.m. That is British Summer Time, and today is July 26th. Today was also the Fed decision. They raised rates by 25 basis points, as expected. The press conference that Jay Powell gave afterwards was reasonably predictable. He just basically said exactly what he said last time around, which was that they're going to continue raising rates until they have clear evidence that inflation is under control. I think the one difference that I noticed at least was that instead of saying that there was a clear benefit to over tightening rather than under tightening, he said that it was more balanced today. That was the thing that stuck out to me at least. And I think when we look at the 2-year yield, which is often regarded as the best predictor of where rates are going to be, then it did not break out to new highs. So the bond market at least is beginning to take into account that the long and variable lags of raising interest rates very aggressively over the last 18 months is probably going to catch up eventually, and that we are unlikely to see a great many more interest rate hikes. But I think then there's going to be the outstanding question of what happens with commodity prices. The Fed is taking some credit for some of the disinflationary forces that we have out there in the wider economy. But how much of that has to do with the fact that oil prices have been coming down and that commodity prices generally pulled back? So Brent crude prices were a little bit easier in here today, and they're still hovering here around the $80 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the do-or-die moment for the rebound. It's either going to sustain a move up through the 200-day moving average now, or it's going to fail. And if it fails, well, every time it has failed from the region of the 200-day moving average, it has gone down and made a new low, and that would open up the potential that it could drop as low as 60. And, of course, then the number one commodity that tends to really get on consumers' nerves is gasoline, and gasoline prices have been also recovering in line with the oil price. So we have gasoline now also pushing on the upside here. It's at a new recovery high overall, and I think that this really looks like more convincing evidence of potentially base formation completion. The price has been ranging below the $3 level now for the last year. So it's approaching that level once more. It's back above the 200-day moving average. There's a sequence of higher reaction lows, and there's obviously the potential that it could break on the upside. At the same time, what we're definitely seeing is more variable economic activity. And we can think about the kinds of results that have come through over the last several days. You have Unilever saying that they're going to engage in some price cutting. You have Ryanair saying that they're not going to be able to sustain the higher prices that they thought they would just last quarter, and that they're going to go back to competing very much on price. Then you have other companies like the luxury goods companies, which are really quite sensitive to consumer demand and aspirational spending by middle class, or the global middle class. And LVMH gapped lower today on slower sales. And then Hermes is going to report earnings on Friday. And it's pulled back in sympathy with LVMH in here today. Well, we've already seen that we've had rather sharp pullbacks from some of the second tier of the big luxury goods companies. So Richemont pulled back very sharply last week and extended the decline in here today. This isn't just about slowing sharp rebound we had in Chinese consumer demand already rolling over, but it's also about aspirational demand coming ebbing in the USA. And this has to be viewed as perhaps part of the altered consumer activity, because people are not spending as much on luxury goods and they're economizing in day-to-day living. But then there have been several articles over the last several months about the economic impact that a Taylor Swift concert can have on a local area, that public transport has to put on additional routes, hotels get booked out, and the tickets are selling are selling for thousands online. And this is happening everywhere that she holds a concert. And then we have Rolls-Royce breaking on the upside in here today. So this has now completed the 3-year base formation. It's I think it's been predictable that the company would eventually recover because air travel would eventually recover. But I think it is part of this growing trend that we see people economizing, that used car prices are declining, that luxury good demand is declining, but travel demand is improving. And people, as they look at tightening budgets, that they'll economize where they can, but at the same time, they're willing to spoil themselves. And one of the ways that people spoil themselves is with trips. So going to concerts, going on vacations, that is something that people are less likely to, are willing to give up. And of course, then we've also had, I thought that it was rather interesting that when we look at Rentokil, and I do apologize, I haven't been typing particularly effectively today. So Rentokil isn't is selling a kind of service that people are less likely to cancel, because if you've got rats or mice or roaches or mosquitoes, and they're problematic for your family, or you've got a phobia, well, then that's the last thing that you're going to want to cut spending on. And it's trading on a rich valuation, but the share is still trending higher. So I think what we're definitely seeing is altered consumer demand as a reflection of inflationary pressures. And I think that's also something that may be factoring into how the Fed is looking at things, because when we think about the kerfuffle that we had with regional banks in March, well, we had this big decline. We had the Federal Reserve stepping in, and regional banks have now recovered the 100 level and are approaching the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. This has been quite an impressive rebound. And then the S&P 500 banks are also still recovering from their lows. And there was a question that was asked of Jay Powell about the discount window. And what he was very clear in stating was that they're encouraging banks to use the discount window. So, but what, of course, that is also very clearly stating is that the Fed is reducing the size of its balance sheet on one hand, and then at the same time is making a large amount of money available via the discount window. Now, it's not free, but it's certainly available, and banks are improving. Now, he also said that internal economists within the Fed are no longer predicting a recession. And I think that's also being greeted rather well by the banking sector. And then after the close in here today, we had Meta coming through with stronger earnings, and the share, which had been pulling back over the course of the last week, well, that's likely to be in positive territory tomorrow, and it has just about recouped most of the decline put in between the peak in 2021 and the low in October of 2022. So this has really been a very impressive rebound over the last 8 months. As we think then about where the performance has come from this year, well, it's been concentrated within that lar those large seven companies. And if you had not owned those seven companies, then the performance of one's portfolio would have been considerably less. But even though we've had a reasonably solid day today, not any big decline on any of the major indices, not any big advance on Wall Street, some weaker action in Europe and weaker action in Asia, the Fangman ratio relative to the total market cap of the NYSE was in mildly negative territory. So we are still in a situation where Commodity prices are reasonably firm, although we did have a downward move in wheat today, where it fell 40 cents, and this is unwinding the short-term overbought condition. Now, we still have a reasonably benign supply situation globally, but I contend that that is something that can't be relied upon. And if Russia is very serious about destroying Ukraine's export capacity, it is within the realm of the possible that they can succeed in doing so. Then it would be the strategic move to retaliate and for Ukraine to then damage Russia's export potential. Now, that would be very problematic for a lot of the people who rely on those two countries for supply, but such are the kinds of things that happen in a war. And there is still the potential that we're going to have some kind of commodity price inflation and energy price inflation. And the dollar was in negative territory today. Cotton prices are coming back up to test the upper side of the 9 month base formation, and it has been a very orderly consolidation over that 9 months. And orange juice prices have been among the strongest anywhere and pushed on to new highs again in here today. So we continue to see that isolated commodities continue to push higher. And I do apologize, it's not SW but QW for white sugar. And sugar prices are in the region of their peaks from about a decade ago. And we're in mildly negative territory in here today, but this still remains a quite consistent advance where we have a sequence of ranges, one above the last, with each of those ranges finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And that remains the case. So this doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation following an acceleration on the upside. And we'd really need to see the price coming back down through the 200-day moving average in order to question that hypothesis. Now, the dollar index was in negative territory today because the Fed is definitely slowing down in terms of their interest rate hikes. And the dollar no longer has quite the same interest rate differential to support it. So we've had a reasonable rebound over the last couple of days, and certainly a bounce from the region of the 100 level on the dollar index. Now, that 100 level really does need to hold. If we see a sustained move down through it, well, then we can start talking about failed upside breaks and potentially type 3 top formations for the dollar. And if the medium-term cycle is about to be reasserted, there is the potential that the dollar could trend downwards for much of the rest of the decade. And that would then contribute to a great recovery in just about everything that's not US dollar denominated. We have lots of ratios, everything from the massive underperformance of commodities relative to the stock market. And of course, the technology sector being the primary reason why the stock market has so roundly outperformed commodities. But it's not simply commodities. It's basically everything that's ex-US has underperformed the US markets, whether that is emerging markets or developed markets, global markets, whether it is income versus growth. Whether we have commodities versus the wider market, which is basically commodities versus technology. And it comes all the way down to just a simple decision about how one defines value. In a low interest rate environment, then the accelerating pace of technological innovation gets a big tailwind. Now, we are going to have that technological innovation one way or another. It's really only a question of how much capital is devoted to it, which allows more ideas to be funded, and then you have a greater chance of new discoveries and new business models being developed. When you have high interest rates, then the hurdle gets higher, and that also means that there's more pressure to innovate. And you still get the technological innovation. You just don't get the same kind of stock market performance because you have fewer companies that can actually achieve it. And you're still going to have some that really spectacularly outperform, but it's a stock picker's environment rather than a thematic environment. So I think a lot is going to depend on exactly what happens with the dollar. And it still looks fairly bearish, and we haven't had any big upward dynamics. And there is obviously then the potential that other currencies are going to appreciate faster versus the dollar. And the pound, having had one disaster after another over the course of the last 20 years, is really at a fraction of the peak values from back in 2005 through 8. And if we think about all the challenges that the UK has gone through, which is, I think, really started with the fact that the North Sea oil wells went dry. And then immediately after, or at least a couple of years after, we had the global financial crisis. And that was a very deep cut, which helped to seed the populist revolt, and which then subsequently resulted in the Brexit vote, and then we've had the pandemic. So it's been really a catalogue of errors, but I think errors is probably not the right word, but certainly a catalogue of semi-disasters. Now the big question is, having divorced itself from the EU, the UK is free to plot its own course. And now the question is, will the political class have the imagination to actually do it? But the discipline that's been forced upon the UK government by the bond market is certainly helping to support the currency. And it's up around the 130 level, and I think it's quite likely that we're going to see the pound up around the 140 level by the end of the year. And that would represent the upper side of the base formation. We've had failed upside breaks leading to above the 140 level, resulting in declines towards the 120, and then the big surprise on the downside in 22. We've had failed downside breaks below 120, resulting in tests of 140. And I think that pattern is likely to be repeated on this occasion. So, foreign investors certainly have a tailwind in terms of investing in the UK. And then the FTSE 250 continues to rebound from the 18,000 level. And there's still a downward bias. There's still a sequence of lower rally highs that's been mostly intact. And it is trading below the 1,000-day moving average. So there's some work to do. But that upward dynamic we saw last week was certainly more encouraging. Now, let's also just continue to monitor what's happening in China, because it is the second largest economy in the world, and what happens in terms of their willingness to support the domestic property market is important, because it's basically China helped to rescue the global economy in 2008 through 12 with their massive stimulus. And in a liquidity-starved environment where interest rates have gone higher in a hurry, and we have the vast majority of central banks reducing the size of their balance sheets, then China represents the greatest potential for a big swing higher in liquidity. And the property index was in negative territory today, following the upper dynamic yesterday. And it is putting in a higher reaction low, and it is still holding that upside weekly key reversal. And we would need to see follow through on the upside next week to confirm the signal, but at least I think there is the potential that we'll have a reversion to the mean, which could tack on another couple of thousand points. But then the next question is, are the government in fact going to follow through? We've had lots of announcements and prognostications, but nothing in the way of a substantive range of measures to support the property market, support the local governments. And then also to solve that three-body problem of how do you support the local governments, the property sector, and the banks without printing a ton of money and just giving it to them? Of course, the answer is a property tax. which would break the cycle, and then would also be enormously problematic for the government to try and introduce. And obviously, that is something that is in the future, and but they will have to grasp that nettle eventually. And it's usually when these sorts of things come through, it's during a crisis. And we're on the cusp of a crisis, and I think that the Chinese government is willing to avoid the potential for a real crisis. But it means that they'll have to support the property market, they'll have to print some money somewhere, and they're not going to like doing it. So it's going to be a bit of back and forth. They're going to be recalcitrant, and they're not really going to want to stimulate the entire global economy. So the measures are probably going to be targeted. And as long as the property developers don't go bust, well, then their valuations are attractive enough that they should be able to have a return, and we might move into a more rangy phase rather than this clear downtrend that's been underway now for nearly 5 years. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.